This is a Collider.com audio interview.
How long have you been doing press this morning, or did you just get started?
You're the first, dude.
Oh, there we go. Nice. I'll crack that cherry this morning.
I'm fresh. I'm not on autopilot. You know, sometimes it's weird. You can get, like, I'll be talking to someone and think, hey, wait, did I already say that to this guy? Did you think I'm a total douchebag because I said the same thing twice in one interview? But so you got me where if I do that, I truly am a douchebag. So.
No, I mean, I've after watching the extras on Shaun of the Dead and seeing what Simon and Nick did with all their phoners, it's changed my entire perspective on talking to the people on the phone.
Wait, what did they do? Were they naked or something?
They were half naked, and they were just, like, making, like, crazy jokes, you know. Like, basically, it's like you just go stir crazy talking to a phone all day.
Yeah, well, I've been there to some degree, yeah.
Jumping in real quick, what I find fascinating about your resume is the diverse nature of your projects, especially because, you know, where you started with George Washington to where you are right now. Did you sort of ever expect your resume to look the way it does?
Well, you know what? I guess I did, because I never really had a real career trajectory idea, and I just like a lot of different kind of movies, and I want to make a lot of different kind of movies, and to some degree you follow opportunity, and to the other degree you have to create your own opportunity. So it's for me, it's as early as film school. You know, I started out making comedy films in film school, and then I tried a couple of dramatic movies, and they were failures, and I didn't feel good about them, which is why, strangely, I had that weird insecurity became my weird ambition for George Washington, is to take what I'd done in a way that I wasn't particularly proud of in a short form, which literally was a short film version of George Washington, and try to make it into a movie, a feature-length movie that I liked, as opposed to some of these, you know, there's movies like Sling Blade and Napoleon Dynamite and Raising Victor Vargas that are brilliant features stemmed from brilliant shorts. Like, I usually try to fix what I feel like is weak, and then, like, when I work on something, I'm not excited about it or I'm not as proud of it as I'd like to be, then I try to work even harder and make the next one kind of address those insecurities. I tackle insecurities rather than run from them, and I think my interest in risk is pretty high, a lot higher than I think a lot of other people who are just looking for, you know, something to kind of define themselves, gives them a set of fingerprints, and certainly is better for the pocketbook. For me, it's always about trying new things and wanting to explore something else and exploit something new of myself and of actors I really like.
Talk a little bit about how The Sitter came together for you. Was this one of these projects that came together super quick? Was it? How'd you get involved?
Yeah, it's actually the first movie that anybody's ever wanted me to make, which is an interesting thing to say, because up until then, every movie I've had to kind of murder people to get made and shove down people's throats and overcome every obstacle and imaginable interest in anybody to make a movie. Everything, you know, has been absolute labor of love, passion projects, and so I was kind of honestly exhausted of that, like, and I kind of felt like I was emotionally exhausted and physically exhausted, and was kind of losing interest and enthusiasm in an industry that I felt for my entire life has been so inspiring. And so I wanted to see if a movie could just be fun. Could I have fun with the process? Could I bring my entire crew from George Washington and make a movie in New York City, where a lot of them live conveniently, and work with actors that I really respect and enjoy? Sam Rockwell, who I'd worked with before on Snow Angels, and Jonah, who I've known since I met on the set of Superbad, and a number of other actors. Eddie Rouse, an actor that's been in a lot of my movies, pops up in this. And so what didn't start out as any sort of seed of a labor of love passion project became that, as a script was handed to me that Gatewood and Tanaka wrote, that I was really excited about, because it reminded me of these kind of 80s John Hughes movies, you know, or not even John Hughes movies, like movies like Risky Business and After Hours and Something Wild, and movies that had a kind of surrealistic edge to a somewhat grounded sense of insane characters on a one night in New York City type of movie, if that was a genre. So this kind of became the exciting idea of that, plus the idea that I could crew it up and cast it up with people I was really passionate about, became exactly what I needed it to be, like a healthy mix of fun and an ambitious movie for us all to kind of roll up our sleeves and make, and it got me excited about the collaborative efforts of it, from the studio level to the PAs on the set, you know, everyone.
We'll talk a little bit about getting the kids and casting. You mentioned Sam and obviously Jonah, but working with kids is always, you always hear those stories. What you know, how long did it take you to find the three kids?
It took a while. You know, we did a big casting call. It's a little strange, particularly when you're casting for the little girl role. I'm not sure if you've seen the movie or not, but there's a character that's kind of a heavily made-up, celebutante-type young lady, and we wanted a 9-year-old girl to play this role, and you send the script out, and you really get a lot of creepy people show up auditioning for that movie. So we were lucky to find Landry, who doesn't have a huge resume, but just came with huge enthusiasm and wasn't that girl, but knew those girls and could bring insight to those girls in a way that, you know, a 35-year-old filmmaker has no clue, other than he thinks it's weird when he sees, you know, a reality TV show about, like, beauty pageants and things. So it was trying to find the heart and soul of these characters. Max Records was an actor that I really admired in Where the Wild Things Are, and Kevin Hernandez was just a guy that at a casting call, a cattle call of kids that came in and really blew us away with his emotional range, and I wanted kids that had depth, not just comic timing. I didn't want sitcom flavored kids. Not that there's anything wrong with a lot of the sitcom kids, but this was something that I wanted to be able to play dramatically as well as comedically, naturalistically. I wanted to do a lot of improvisation. I think anytime you hear a director or particularly a textbook talking about the frustrations of kids, those are people that are looking for control, and I'm not a director that's about precision and control and perfection. I'm about creating an atmosphere that's organic and interesting and letting people loose, and for that there's no greater actor or performer than children. Animals are maybe a close runner-up. So the things that people typically are afraid of are what I find most exciting and unpredictable, and I guess that's part of the problem, is that a lot of people don't want something unpredictable, wasting their time while the camera's rolling, where, to me, that's by far the most interesting part.
I actually saw the film last night. I laughed a ton. My next thing, though, is the movie is a very tight, like 80-something minutes, which leads me to believe that you obviously ended up with some deleted scenes or a whole bunch of takes with Jonah. You know, I know he knows how to improv quite well. So how tough was it to edit this thing? How long did you spend in the editing room?
We were in the editing room for a while. I worked with my editor is Craig Alpert, who's done the last three movies with me, and having grown up, Craig kind of been conditioned in the Apatow world, is certainly very familiar with improv and the tangents of improvisation and where that can go. And we did a lot of that. I will say that some of the interesting deleted scenes took it in a direction tonally that became kind of in conflict with the movie. Like, we would have very aggressive dramatic scenes, some that were very a little too surreal, or things that became, I guess, a little off-putting when you put it up in front of a test screening audience, which I have mixed opinions about. But in terms of sculpting the movie, it just felt, it felt better the more efficient it got. And when we'd play, you know, there was a scene that I really loved personally, selfishly, of Sam Rockwell crying in the arms of a female bodybuilder. It's one shot. It's like 2 minutes long. And it was Sam giving a monologue, and then I kind of whispered to this lady that was a background actor. I said, go over there and start hugging him and see what happens in the middle of while the cameras are on. And some really magical, beautiful, strange, sentimental things started happening. And that was one of the things where when we put it into the movie, I was like, this is delicious and juicy. And then you show it to a crowd that's confused and disturbed by it. And so you see that, you know, maybe it's not for this movie to take it in that kind of subversive direction, I'd say, you know. So there's a lot of exploration we had in the editing room, which took time, and it took a lot of experimentation, seeing what really fit. I really stand by the movie we're releasing theatrically. At the same time, there's a 8-minute extended version that's going to be on the DVD that I think is something really worth my signature on it as well. Something that does include those type of things that is far more of a challenging version of the movie to the audience. And then you just have to ask yourself those questions. Are you making a movie to really push the envelope? Or can you find a fine line that tells your story and you stand by it and has your fingerprint, but it's also something that, you know, a massive commercial audience can actually find appealing as well?
Well, I was going to say that, you know, the studios love releasing extended, unrated editions, so I'm sure they're incredibly happy to be able to put 8 minutes on the Blu-ray/DVD.
Well, it's interesting because I've had a couple other experiences having to do that contractually and being really bummed out, because I typically find movies too long. Like, I'm a big fan of the 81, 86-minute movie. 89 is pretty good, too. But when movies get over 2 hours, I really, you know, I don't know, Hugo being the only exception recently that I think I was captivated for an extended period. But but you know, I find there's a lot of other things to do besides sitting in a dark room sometimes, and I start thinking about what those are and start looking at my watch after a movie is kind of seems to be getting a little too indulged in itself.
Oh, which is interesting because I'm seeing Dragon Tattoo, and that's 2 hours 40 minutes. So I'm sure you're a huge fan of that.
No, you know what? A movie like that'll have me by the ball. So you have to really deserve over 2 hour length. You know, it has to be relentless. And you know, I'll watch Into the Void, you know, every Sunday for the rest of my life just because I need that kind of experience in my head. But
I was going to say though, does Fincher get a get out of jail free card?
Well, we'll see what the movie has to say. I couldn't be more excited about it, and that doesn't intimidate me, you know. So that time, but if I see Jonah Hill comedy about Jonah taking 3 kids on a coke run in New York City, and it's 2 hours and 40 minutes, I'm gonna wonder what the fuck I'm getting into.
I do agree with you. I definitely want to ask you about a few other things. You're producing what's called right now the Untitled Todd Rahl Project, and did that end up being filmed, or did that wrap, or can you sort of give me an update?
Yeah, I just saw it. It's good. Todd Rahl, who's I'm not sure if you're familiar with his work, but he's a director that I became really smitten with. I saw this indie movie he'd made called The Guatemalan Handshake, which is one of the best movies of the last 10 years. And a buddy of mine, Nick Panagopoulos, was a producer on this movie, and he sent me the DVD. I was like, who is this guy? This is, like, brilliant. It's somewhere between Gummo and Napoleon Dynamite. It's like, it felt like a gift to me. And so when Todd made that movie, I kind of did backflips and showed it to Danny McBride and Jody Hill and a lot of my buddies, and we ended up, several of us and some other investors ended up financing this bizarre movie he made. It was at Sundance last year called The Cataclysm. It's a tongue twister, but it's a really, really interesting movie that our friend Steve Little and Robert Longstreet are the stars of, and so Todd made that film, and you know, strangely, IFC bought it, and it's, you know, it's a really interesting, destined for cult status type of movie. And so, you know, just in terms of supporting him, now we've got a bigger budget and bigger movie stars, Patton Oswalt and Johnny Knoxville, and you know, a really great cast of characters, including a lot of guys that I've worked with, like Eddie Rouse, and you know, some really talented people. It's about a Boy Scout trip, a camping trip. So they just finished that movie, or they're just, you know, they're editing it right now, but I just saw a cut of it, and it's coming together really good. It's also fun just to kind of have splinter groups of filmmakers who I'm a fan of, and then being able to, like Joey Stevens, who did the music for Observe and Report and does a lot of the music on Eastbound and Down, is going to compose music for them. And, you know, you can kind of, like, big brother and godfather, good crews of people together that you can really stand by and be excited about what they're turning out. I consider myself more of a movie fan than a film fan than a filmmaker. You know, or I guess it's kind of a balance these days, fortunately. But I really want to see good movies as much as I want to make good movies, and I want to see bizarre movies as much as I want to make bizarre movies. And so it's fun to find the young, hungry voices and help give that a platform.
No, totally. I have to ask you, though, if I'm not mistaken, that's Patrice O'Neill's, like, probably last film role.
Absolutely. Yeah, someone was asking me about that yesterday. That was the last film before he died, which is really, really tragic. But, you know, a pleasure to work with and a real comedic talent. So it's nice to have captured as much of him on film as we could in his days.
Well, I was going to ask you...
Last question. Thank you.
Sure. I'll make this a two-parter. How much of a part does he have in that one? And I definitely want to ask you, what's up with... Do you think that this time travel love story Q is going to be your next film?
With Patrice, it's a great supporting role. It's a really fun character. It's kind of in and out of the film. You know, he's not the lead in it, but he's a great part of it and a crucial part of it. And a very hilarious and aggressive part of it, which is cool. And as far as Q's a movie, it's a book I've just started adapting for Sony. Working with Matt Tolmach on that. He was an executive at Sony. Now he's a producer doing Spider-Man and some really cool projects. And I had a great experience with him on Pineapple Express. So we decided to work together and trying to do it. It's a great New York love story time travel movie. So it's you know, it gets me back in a very dramatic space as a writer, which is exciting because it's been a while since I've made myself vulnerable, at least to my computer. And so I'm excited about that. I'm excited about kind of, you know, taking my pants off, sitting in my underwear, cracking a few jokes, but trying to keep the heart on the sleeve, you know?
No, totally. I mean, do you know what you're going to do next, or are you just writing?
Well, I've got a few projects. I'm flirting with this horror film that I'm hoping to make in Germany this spring. I've got a couple other strange little, probably lower profile, low budget dramas, and then Q. So we'll see what actually lands. You know, the reality is I get caught in the development wave like we all do. But I'm pretty excited about the possibilities that I have this year.
No, totally, man. Well, listen, all the best. Big fan of your work, and good luck with the rest of the day doing press.
Great, thanks a lot. Good talking to you.
Hey, later, man.